This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner, entitled Becoming the Archangel Michael's Companions, Rudolf Steiner's Challenge to the Younger Generation. This is Lecture 11, given in Stuttgart on October 13, 1922. During the epoch of the consciousness soul, the most abstract elements come consciously to life in the inner human being, yet also in the subconscious. In what human beings desire for of life, the most concrete is seeking to work its way into existence. The human being who is growing into the epoch of the consciousness soul is held fast today in the abstract ideas of the head. However, there lives outside of the head, if I may so express myself, the desire to experience more than the head is able to. To begin with, people's only connection with nature is formed between nature and the head. Everything they absorb in science, so far as they regard it as valid, is acquired from nature through the head. Between the human being and nature today there always stands the person's head. It is as though everything that comes to the human being from the world were to pour itself into the head, as though the head were entirely stopped up so that it lets nothing through its dense layers that could bring about a relation with the world. Everything remains stuck fast in the head. People think everything through only with their heads. But the human being cannot, after all, live merely as head, for joined to the head is the rest of the organism. The life of the rest of the organism remains dull, unconscious, because everything is directed toward the head. Everything stops short there. The rest of the human being receives nothing from the world, because the head allows nothing to reach it. The head has gradually become an insatiable glutton. It wants to have everything that comes from the world outside, and one is obliged to live where the heart and the rest of the organism is concerned, as if one had nothing whatever to do with the surrounding world. But these other parts of the organism develop wish, will, capacity for desire, and feel themselves isolated. For instance, the eyes catch colors and allow only scanty remains to be experienced in the head, and so the colors cannot work down. They cannot reach the blood or the nervous system in the rest of the body. It is only in the head that human beings still know something about the world. But they have all the more capacity for intensely desiring with the rest of their organism to come together with the outside world in some way. In the young human being who is growing up lives this desire to find some kind of connection with the world, not only with the head but with the rest of the organism, to learn to think and come to experience the world, not only with the head but with the whole person. Human beings today still have the capacity of learning to experience the world with the whole person, only at an early age. For what I have just been saying refers to the adult. Before the change of teeth, children still have the faculty of grasping the world with their whole being. It would be a mistake to suppose that the baby's experience when nursing is as abstract as an adult's. When we drink milk, we taste it on our tongue and perhaps around our tongue, but we lose the experience of taste when the milk passes through our throat. People ought to ask why their stomach should be less capable of tasting than the palate. The stomach is not less, but equally capable of tasting. But the head is a glutton, and in the grown person the head claims all taste for itself. The child, however, tastes with its entire organism, and therefore with its stomach. The infant is all sense organ. There is nothing in the infant that is not sense organ. The infant tastes with its whole being. Later this is forgotten, and this tasting is impaired when the child learns to speak. But then the head, which has to take part in learning to speak, begins to stir and develops the first stage of insatiability. The head, in return for giving itself up to learning to speak, reserves for itself the pleasures of tasting. Even as regards, quote, tasting the world, close quote, the connection with the world is very soon lost. Now this tasting the world is of no particular importance, but in another connection, the relation of the whole human being with the world is of extraordinary importance. You see, we can get to know an important philosopher such as Johann Gottlieb Fichte in various ways. Every way is right. I do not wish to stress any one of the following in particular. It is wonderful to go deeply into the philosophy of Fichte, which not many people do today, because they find it too difficult. And much is gained from it. Yet they would have gained far more if, with their whole feeling, they had followed behind Fichte and had seen him walk, planting the whole sole of his foot, and especially his heels, firmly on the ground. In Johann Gottlieb Fichte's walk, in the curious way he set his heel on the ground, is a tremendous power. For those able to experience each step with the whole being, this would have been a more intensive philosophy than all Fichte was able to say from the platform. It may seem preposterous, but perhaps you will feel what I am trying to say. Today such things have been entirely lost. Those who were little, not 20 but 50 years ago, can still remember that such a philosophy still existed among those living in the country. In the country, people still got to know each other in this way, and many expressions out of the dialect, with their wonderful sculptural quality, reveal how what is seen today only in the head was seen then in the whole person. It was said, for instance, of some women in the country, she goes around schnoitzen, an idiom in Austria. Among us head people, schnoitzen means to blow one's nose, in a perhaps not so appropriate manner. That is not what it meant back then. At that time, the whole human being, schnoitzte, blew the nose. The manner in which a person walked, the posture, the way he or she set one foot in front of the other, the whole behavior and affectation could be called a schnoitzen. It was felt that there was something in the whole being of such a person that was like a blowing of one's nose in a not-so-appropriate manner. As I have said, these things have been lost. Human beings have reduced themselves to their head and have forced themselves to believe that the head is their most valuable part. But this has not made them overly happy, because the rest of human nature asserts its claims in the subconscious. Experiencing through something other than the head is lost today in early childhood with the change of teeth. If you have an eye for these things, you can see the walk of the father or the mother in the son or daughter 2 or 3 decades later. So exactly have children lived into the adults around them that what they have sensed there becomes part of their own nature. But this living into others no longer spells culture today. Culture is what the head observes, and what can be worked out by means of the head. Sometimes people even dispense with the head, and then they write everything down and put it in the archives. Then it goes out of the head into the hair, where it cannot be retained, because at 30 they no longer have any hair. But really, I am not saying this as a joke, for the sake of being critical, for this is all part of the necessary development of humanity. People had to become like this to find through inner effort, through inner activity, what they can no longer find in a natural way, the possibility to experience freedom. And so today, after the change of teeth, we must simply pass over to a different way of experiencing the surrounding world from that of experiencing with the whole human being, which still exists among children. Therefore, primary school education in future must proceed by the roundabout way of the artistic that I described yesterday, so that through the outer human being, the soul nature of the other person is experienced. If you educate human beings through what is abstract and scientific, they experience nothing of your soul. They only experience your soul if you approach them through art. For in the realm of the artistic, everyone is individual. Each one is a different person. It is the ideal of science that everyone should be alike. It would be quite a thing, so say people today, were everyone to teach a different science. But that could not be, for science confines itself to what is the same for all human beings. In the realm of the artistic, each human being is an individuality. Through the artistic element, therefore, there can come about an individual personal relation to the child, to the person who is alive and active, and this is necessary. True, one does not come to the feeling for the whole person as outer physical being, as in the first years of childhood, but to a feeling for the soul of the one who is to lead. Education must have soul. But as a scientist, one cannot have soul. We can have soul only through what we are artistically. We can have soul if we give science an artistic form through the way it is presented, but not through the content of science as science is understood today. Science is not an individual personal affair. Hence, during the elementary school age, it establishes no relation between teacher and pupil. All instruction must therefore be permeated by art, by human individuality, for the individuality of the teacher and educator is of more value than any curriculum is that is thought out. It is the individuality of the teacher that must work in the school. What grows between teacher and pupil from the change of teeth to puberty and creates the link between them? What binds them together is solely what human beings bring with them into their earthly existence from supersensible spiritual worlds, from their pre-earthly existence. My dear friends, the head never recognizes what people bring with them out of their pre-earthly life. The head is made for the purpose of grasping what is on the earth. And on the earth there is only the physical human being. The head understands nothing of what in the other human being comes from pre-earthly existence. In the particular coloring the artistic impulse gives to the human soul, there lives and weaves what the human being has brought down from pre-earthly existence. And between the period of the change of teeth and puberty, children are particularly disposed to feel in their hearts what meets them in the teacher as coming out of pre-earthly existence. Just as young children have the tendency to feel the outer human form in its earthly shape, so from their 7th to their 14th or 15th year, they seek, through living together with human beings, something that does not lend itself to be grasped in concepts, but is manifested in the teacher. If we wanted to find a concept for this something, it would resist conceptual form. Concepts have contours, that is to say, external boundaries. But human individuality, in the sense described, has no external boundaries, only intensity and quality, and is experienced as intensity, as quality, very particularly in the period of life referred to. It is experienced, however, through no other atmosphere than that of the artistic. But we are now living in the epoch of a consciousness soul. The first treasures we acquire for the soul in this epoch consist of intellectual concepts, of abstractions. Today, even the farmer loves abstractions. How could it be otherwise? For the farmer indulges in the most abstract reading matter, the village newspaper, and much else besides. Our riches consist really in abstractions. And therefore we must free ourselves from this kind of thinking through developing what I spoke of yesterday. We must purify our thinking and mold it into will. To this end we must struggle to make our individuality stronger and stronger. And this happens only when we work our way through to pure thinking. I do not say this out of idle vanity, but because that is how I see it. Whoever works their way through to pure thinking, as I have described in my title Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path, also known as the Philosophy of Freedom, also known as the Philosophy of Spiritual Activity, will find that this does not bring them simply to the possession of a few concepts that make up a philosophic system, but that it lays hold of their own individuality, of their pre-earthly existence. Human beings do not need to become clairvoyant immediately. That will happen only when they are able to behold pre-earthly existence. Yet they can confirm what is said by gaining the strength of will that is acquired in the flow of pure thoughts. Then the individuality comes forth. then one does not feel happy with a philosophic system in which one concept proceeds from another and everything has rigid outlines. One feels compelled to have one's being in a living and weaving world. We acquire a special kind of life of soul when we experience in the right way what is meant by the philosophy of freedom. It is really a bringing in of pre-earthly existence into the life of the human being that is brought about, and this is the preparation for the vocation of teacher, of educator. We cannot become teachers through study. We cannot drill others into being teachers, because each one of us is already a teacher. All human beings are teachers. But the teacher within is slumbering and must be awakened, and art is the awakener. When this is developed, it brings the teachers as human beings nearer to those whom they would educate. And as human beings, the pupils must get close to the teachers. Those who are to be educated must get something from the educators as human beings. It would be terrible if people were to believe it possible to teach just because they know a great deal. This leads to absolute absurdity. This absurdity will be apparent to you if you think about the following picture. Now take a class in a school that has perhaps 30 pupils. Among these pupils there are, let us say, 2 geniuses, or only 1, for that is enough. And if you have to organize a school, you can always give the post of teacher to a genius, just for a future genius, to be able to learn all he or she must be able to learn. You will say that this would not matter in the elementary school, and that the child will go on to a higher school and will certainly find geniuses as teachers there. You would not say this, because experience does not bear it out, but you must admit the case may arise that the teacher is faced with a class in which there are children predestined to become more brilliant than the teacher is. Now our task as teachers consists in bringing the children not merely to our degree of aptitude, but to the full development of their own potential. As teachers, therefore, we may come into the position of having to educate somebody who will be greater than we. It is impossible to provide schools with enough teachers unless one holds to the principle that it does not matter if the teacher is not as brilliant as the pupil will be some day. Nevertheless, this person will still be a good teacher, because the giving out of knowledge is not what is important, but the individuality and making the pre-earthly existence come to life. Then it is really the children who educate themselves through us. And that is the truth, for in reality we do not educate at all. We only disturb the process of education when we intervene too energetically. We only educate when we behave in such a way that through our own behavior the children can educate themselves. We send children to primary school in order to rid them of troublesome elements. The teacher should see to it that the troublesome elements are eliminated, so that the children escape conditions under which they cannot develop. So we must be quite clear that we cannot cram anything into human beings through teaching and education. What we can do is to see to it that human beings, as they grow up, should succeed in developing their potential. That we can do, not through what we know, but through what stirs inwardly within us in an artistic way. And even if the rare thing should happen that as teachers we are not particularly endowed with genius, one should not say this, but in spite of your youth movement, you are old enough for me to say it, and we have only a kind of instinctive artistic sense, we will offer less hindrance to the growth of the child's soul than the teacher who is tremendously learned, but inartistic. To be tremendously learned is not difficult. These things must be said most emphatically for once, for even when spoken clearly, our age does not hear them. Our age is terribly unreceptive toward such things. And regarding those who assure one that they have understood everything, it is often apparent after 30 years that they have understood nothing. Thus the configuration of soul in the human being is what is essential in practical pedagogy, in instruction and education, during the child's life between the change of teeth and puberty. And after this, the human being enters a period of life in which, in this age of the consciousness soul, still deeper forces must work up out of human nature, if humans are to give anything to one another. You see, the manner of feeling with which one person meets another is tremendously complicated. If you wanted to describe the whole round of sympathies and antipathies, and the interworking of sympathies and antipathies with which you meet another person, you would never come to an actual definition. In 50 years you would not succeed in defining what you can experience in 5 minutes as the relations of life between person and person. Before puberty, it is preeminently an experience of the pre-earthly. The pre-earthly sheds its light through every movement of the hands, every look, through the very stressing of words. Actually, it is the quality of the gesture, the word, the thought of the teacher that works through to the child and which the child is seeking. And when, as grown-up people, so grown up that we have reached the age of 15 or 16 or even beyond, we meet other human beings, then the matter is still more complicated. Then what attracts or repels others in a human being actually veils itself in a darkness impenetrable to the world of abstract concepts. But if, with the help of anthroposophy, we investigate what one can really experience in 5 minutes, but cannot describe in 50 years, we find that it is what rises up from the previous earthly life or series of earthly lives into the present life of the soul, and what is exchanged in the souls. This indefinite, indefinable element that comes upon us when we meet as adults is what shines through from earlier lives on earth into the present. Not only the pre-earthly existence, but everything we have passed through in the way of destiny in our successive earthly lives. And if we study what is working upon the human being, we find how today, in the epoch of the consciousness soul, because everything is pushed into the head, and what we take in from the outer world cannot get through to the whole human being, our head culture sets itself against what alone can work from person to person. Human beings pass one another by because they stare at each other only with the head, with the eyes. I will not say because they knock their heads together. Human beings pass one another by because only what plays over from repeated earthly lives can work between person and person, and modern culture does nothing to develop a sense for this. This must also be brought into our education, that we be able to sense and feel what is in the depths of the human being that plays over from previous earthly lives. This will not be achieved unless we include in our education the whole human life as it takes place on earth. Today there is only a feeling for the immediate present. Therefore all that is asked of education is that it shall benefit the children. But if this is the only thing that is asked, very little service is rendered to life. Firstly, because the question is put one-sidedly, one gets a one-sided answer. And secondly, children should be educated for the whole of life, not only for the schoolroom or the short period after school, so that they do not disgrace us. We need an understanding for the imponderable things in life, an understanding for the unity in human life as a whole, as it unfolds on earth. There are human beings whose very presence, at a certain age, is felt by those around them as a blessing. There are such human beings. If we were to look for the reason why such people have become a blessing to those around them, not through their acts but through their beings, we would find that as children they were fortunate to have been able in a natural way to look up to someone in authority whom they could revere. They had this experience at the right time of life, and because they were able to revere, after many years they become a blessing to the world around them. It can be expressed concisely by saying that there are human beings who can bless. There are not many, but there are human beings who attain the power to bless at a later age. Two human beings are causally connected, praying and blessing. No one learns to bless who does not learn it from prayer. This must not be understood sentimentally or with the slightest tinge of mysticism, but rather as a phenomenon of nature is observed, except that this phenomenon is nearer to us in a human way. Children must be able to grow according to their nature. If you were to devise an apparatus for children that would keep them a certain size so that they could not grow, so that they would remain as they are all their lives, this would be terrible. Human beings must be able to grow. Yet in school we supply the children with concepts and have as our ideal that they should remain unchanged for the whole of their lives. Children are supposed to preserve these concepts in memory. And in 50 years these concepts are to be the same as they are today. Our school textbooks work on the children in such a way that they must remain little. The right way is to educate children so that all their concepts can grow, that their concepts and will impulses are really alive. This is not easy, but the artistic way of education succeeds in doing it. And the children have a different feeling when we offer them living concepts instead of dead ones, for unconsciously they know that what they are given grows with them, just as their arms grow with their bodies. It is heartbreaking to witness children being educated to define a concept, so that they have the concept as a definition only. It is just the same as if we wanted to confine a limb in an apparatus. Children must be given pictures capable of growth, pictures which become something quite different in 10 or 20 years. If we give them pictures that are capable of growth, we stimulate in them the faculty through feeling to find their way into what is often hidden in the depths of another human individuality. And so we see how complicated are the connections. We learn to come to a deeper relation to human beings through the possibility being given us in our youth for growth in our life of soul. For what does it mean to experience another human being? We cannot experience other people through dead concepts. We can comprehend them only if we meet them in such a way that they become for us an experience that takes hold of us inwardly. For this, however, inner activity is needed. Otherwise, our culture will already reach the point that it is fast approaching. People go out to luncheons, dinners, and teas without knowing much about one another. It is about themselves that modern people know the most. And what do they instinctively make of their experiences? How do they judge the people they meet at lunch or dinner? At most they think, are they like me or are they different? And if we believe them to be like ourselves, we consider them to be quite fine. If they are not like ourselves, then they are not fine people, and we do not trouble ourselves about them any longer. And as most people are not the same as we are, the most we can do is sometimes to believe, because really it would be too boring to find no fine person anywhere, that we have found someone like ourselves. However, in this way, we do not really find another human being, but always only ourselves. We see ourselves in other people. For many people this is relatively good, for if they were to meet somebody who in their opinion was not altogether, but yet to a certain extent, a fine person, and were really to comprehend this person, it would be so overwhelming an experience that it would quite drown out their own humanity. By a second encounter, their capital I would be drowned out still more deeply. In the case of a third or fourth, there would be no approaching the person at all, for by that time they would certainly have lost themselves. There is too little inner strength and activity, too little kernel, too little inner individuality developed, so people, for fear of losing themselves, dare not experience the other human being. Thus, people pass one another by. The most important thing is to establish an education through which human beings learn, once again, how to live with one another. This cannot be done through hollow phrases. It can be done only through an art of education founded upon a true knowledge of the human being, that art of education referred to here. But our intellectualistic age has plunged the whole of life into intellectuality. In our institutions, we actually live very much as if we are no longer among human beings at all. We live in an embodied intellect in which we are entangled, not like a spider in its own web, but like countless flies that have caught themselves, that have got themselves caught in a spider's web. When we meet anyone, do we feel in any sense what this human being can be for us? Do we judge today as humanly as this? No, for the most part we do not. We ask if, perhaps, on the door of a certain person's house, there will be a little plate with an inscription, quote, "Counselor at Law," close quote, conveying a concept of some kind. In another case, the inscription is, quote, "Medical practitioner," close quote. Now we know that this person can cure us. In another case, the inscription is, quote, "Professor of English," close quote. And now we know something about this person. If we want to know something about chemistry, we have no other choice than to inquire if somewhere there is a person who is a qualified chemist. What this person can tell us, then, is chemistry. And so it goes. We are really caught up in this spider's web of concepts. We do not live among human beings. We only concern ourselves with what is on paper. For many people, that is their only essential fact. How else should they know what kind of human being I am, unless it is written down somewhere on paper? This, of course, is all said somewhat radically, and yet it does characterize our epoch. Intellectuality is no longer merely in our heads, but it is woven around us everywhere. We are guided by concepts and not by human impulses. When I was still very young, when at Baden, near Vienna, I got to know the Austrian poet Hermann Rollet, long since dead. He was convinced that the right thing was development toward intellectualism. At the same time, however, he had an incurable dread of this, for he felt that intellectualism only takes hold of a person's head. And once when I visited him with Schröer, he began to speak in poetical fashion about his incurable fear in regard to culture. He said, "When one looks at human beings today, they cannot use their fingers properly. Many of them cannot write. They get writer's cramp. Their fingers atrophy. When it is a question of sewing on trouser buttons, they cannot do it. Only tailors can do that. The fingers and the limbs will not only become less skillful, but will also become smaller. They will wither away and heads will get larger and larger." That is how he described his poet's dream. He said he thought the time would come when only heads like balls would be rolling about over the surface of the earth. That was the cultural dread I met with in this man in the last third of the 19th century. He was a child of his age, that is to say, a materialist, and that was why he had so great a dread that at some point in the future such heads would be rolling about on the earth. Physical heads will not do this, but to a serious extent the etheric and astral heads do it already today. A healthy education of the young must protect human beings from this, must set human beings upon their legs again and lead them to the point where if they are pondering something, they will feel the beating of their heart again and not merely add something to their knowledge. These are the things we must take into account if in preparation for humanity's future we wish to live into what must be decisive for the pedagogical art, for the art of education. I shall try to develop what is yet to be said about this for you tomorrow. The end of Lecture 11.